That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Lafondra looking to get close side of Font. Lafondra away from David. 3-1 Reading. 3 points Reading.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Elm Park Rolls podcast, sponsored by Blue Collar Street Food. A relatively good Sunday morning as a Reading fan, as we come back from behind for the second game in a row to pick up some points. And to go through yesterday's action with me, I've been joined by Matt Williamson.
Hello, mate. Nice of, to talk through a non-loss with you as host. This is your first in a while, isn't it?
It is the first in a while, and I'm privileged to also be joined by Matt Joy to discuss this momentous occasion.
No, it's nice to be back with you too, and yeah, nice to be back on not a particularly sour note, relatively pleased this morning.
Can't complain too much of a point, can we? But we'll come on to that in a little bit. We'll skip past the points deduction news. We've kind of discussed it. If you haven't gone and listened to our preview podcast from this week, we did have a kind of 25-minute discussion about it, and I'd recommend just popping back and listening to that and getting some reaction about it. But we'll move on. We'll just discuss yesterday's game. Matt, the team first 11, Danny Drinkwater came back in for Dele Bashiri, but the bigger news, Andy Carroll didn't start yesterday and was on the bench. I think most people expected that, but were you pleased to see Danny Drinkwater come back in at the very least?
You know, we're both called Matt, right?
So that's going to
be a very confusing way.
I've just realised this as well, but yeah. I'll just have to hope that one of you kind of like reacts in
well,
the
right
way.
Well, I'll take that one then.
I'll tell you what, for the next 20 minutes or so, just go with MJ.
I'll go with MJ.
Yeah, that works. Probably should have discussed this pre-podcast, but you know, it's all, you know, unedited, unfiltered. Isn't that what this is called? Anyway, yeah, so Andy Carroll starting on the bench. I thought that it was... Yeah, as you say, expected. I think there was a few hopeful people on Twitter after Paunovic came out and said, we put 45 minutes of load through him, but he also caveated that with the fact it was his first day and he probably had some, you know, adrenaline and whatnot. I was a bit surprised that we kept the formation from the second half of Birmingham. Like I was hopeful that we'd keep the back four, but given that we were up against the Steve Cooper team, I thought we might switch to the back three. But Holmes on the right did really well, and Yeardom at right wing is probably our best option there at the minute. Dele Bashiri, I think, will be a little bit unfortunate, or will feel a little bit unfortunate to miss out, because I don't think he's really done too much wrong since putting on a Reading shirt, but it's nice to be able to have a decision to make for Paunovic rather than just having to pick the 11 that are fit.
Yeah, first time we've actually had more than one kind of professional substitute on the bench who isn't under the age, as is over the age of 18, right? Which is a nice thing to see this season. Unfortunately, MJ, we did start badly again, very reminiscent to that game that Matt mentioned at Birmingham. And we were 1-0 down after 3 minutes.
Yeah, and...
The goal itself, not good defending again.
No, and Liam Moore again has to look at himself. I thought the way he sort of not cowered from a challenge, because there was an attempt to do something with it. But, you know, when you've been coming out all week and you've been saying, you know, we need to fight back from this deduction, we need to do it. And then within 4 minutes, you see that and you think... this could be a long afternoon. But credit to Liam Moore, he did pick himself up and obviously made an important clearance later in the game. But I did think, yeah, in the first, I remember the first 25 minutes, I just sat there and thought, I feels like I've been here for about 2 hours. And I only got into the ground 5 minutes before kickoff. It just felt like the passing from both teams was just so poor. It was just such a, I felt in the first half an hour, the quality of the game was just dreadful. I mean, it was just the cheap passes that were being given away. But having said that, I thought the second half did actually make up for it, because I thought the second half was a very entertaining game. And I thought both teams definitely picked it up.
And I guess they needed to, Matt, after that opener from Zinchenko, because Reading, I mean, they kind of just parted when Zinchenko ran at them.
Yeah, I mean, it was a weird one, right? Like, I agree that Liam Moore wasn't good on the goal, and I think he's going to get most of the stick. But equally, like, Yeardom and Drinkwater try and tackle Zinchenko in midfield and then let him run free, which is why he's allowed to run at Moore in the first place. Moore does this thing sometimes where he's going one way and the guy can cut inside of him far too easily. Like, it happened at Huddersfield as well. And I think it's sort of to do with his body weight, right? Like, Alex, you talk about it a lot. He kind of dangles out a leg. If he doesn't dangle out a leg, I think that there'd be a lot less criticism on him, though. Like, because I'm not sure it's his fault to deal with to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like he's going to get... I mean, if he doesn't put out a leg, he's probably going to get beaten anyway, right?
Yeah, 100%. Like, yeah, I don't think it's necessarily his fault. And then also, like, you do have to look at Scott Dann, because he does... I think it's grab and running across him. It's not, you know, it's sort of difficult. But he... If Liam Moore and Scott Dann swap places, and Liam Moore kind of goes to block a shot that doesn't happen and then gets the ball gets curled into the other corner, I think... there would also be people screaming bloody murder about that. So I think we should do the same thing when Scott Dann's involved. It's a team failure, I think. We shouldn't just highlight Liam Moore, because, yes, he was bad in that moment, but a lot of other players were also bad.
I do agree. And just one thing, actually, to add to that. I wouldn't have even minded seeing, if you're in the fourth minute of a game, if a player's 35, 40 yards from goal, as he starts his run, and there's an opportunity... just give him a shoulder barge. Just put him to the floor. If it looks like he's going to burst free and into space, you may get a booking that early on. I would say it's probably quite unlikely if it's not, you know, you're not going in and make a slide tackle from behind. If you're just giving him a little nudge, if possible, you might get away. Give it an opportunity to regroup. I think you just need to be a bit smarter in that circumstance.
Yeah. I mean, it was only, 4 minutes in. So if the referee is going to book you at that point, then that's unfortunate. But it's, yeah. 1-0 down after 4 minutes. It's not really where anybody wanted to see Reading yesterday. And it was another game when we looked like we were going to have to come back from behind. And the last few years have been just pretty awful for that measure. We really struggled to come back from behind, despite the fact that we did come back from behind against Birmingham in our last game out. That was, I think, the first time in maybe a year that we've done that. So it did feel like it was going to be a long afternoon after 4 minutes. The rest of the first half, Reading played better, Matt, I think. There was definitely some positives to take out of it. Tom Holmes was especially kind of a standout player.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I thought you were being called MJ, Matt.
Oh, no, I've got the bats confused. I'm sorry.
Oh, mate, this podcast is going to be an absolute disaster. Alex just giggling away like he set this up to begin with.
I'll tell you what, I'll mute myself until I hear a definitive MJ.
Well, you can take this one, MJ. Go for it.
We can both do it, but I'll jump in quickly because I'm sure, to be fair, I'm sure, Matt, we would have the same sort of points. I think that Tom Holmes, especially in that first half, was really good. I think he had a lot of attention down that side. And I think there was a number of one-on-ones that he won with strong challenges that gave the Reading fans, especially in Club 1871, where those tackles were normally being made in front of, it gave them something to cheer about, because in the first half, there weren't huge amounts of sort of, you know, goal mouth opportunities. So it was something just to get behind the team. I think we saw as well, as a result of how well Tom Holmes was playing, I noticed a lot of, you know, switches out to the other wing. And I think that was too easy to be. It was too easy that they Forrest could do that. But I think they maybe had the idea of, okay, we're not having much luck here. Let's try something else.
Yeah, and I mean, I would say, like, on the whole, coming in at half time, I thought that Reading were very much in the game. Like, I didn't think that Forest were getting away from us. We had a lot of action on the edge of their box, but without any way to kind of penetrate. And as someone who was skeptical about Andy Carroll going into the game, it felt very much like a game like built for Andy Carroll at that point. Which is funny because it changed a little bit in the second half. But yeah, I mean, there were a couple of chances, Alex.
Puskás
had another one, didn't he?
Yeah, Puskás had one. I mean, just before that, a half an hour in or so, we had our first proper chance of the game. Babarahman had our first shot on target from 20 yards. And as you say, we did struggle to get the ball into the area and actually kind of create chances in the area. And that one came from, 20 yards out or so. I think he's going to score one of these at some point. He's had a couple of them now, hasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, this one was closer than his one in the second half that went out for a throw-in. But yeah, I mean, he is a very clean striker of the ball. And as you say, like, one of them will probably go in at some point, but it was a comfortable save. I think Drinkwater also had a chance kind of a little bit earlier on where Yeardom down the right opened up a bit of space and then was able to cut it back for him. And Drinkwater just kind of passed it at Samba, but kind of ricocheted around the box a little bit. I think that was the change between this first half and other first halves this season, is that I didn't feel we were overwhelmed. I felt like we were on the front foot and had chances, which is unusual for a Reading team currently. And second half, I thought that if anything, we were probably going to push on and look even better.
And we did have one more chance before the halftime break. And it was probably the biggest chance of the half, MJ, falling to Puskás. What was he, 8-9 yards out, I think, finds himself pretty alone in the area. And again, this is one which you can maybe add to the Puskás shot reel from this season.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think with Puskás, you've got to look at, I think there's one thing that I think Reading fans may be a bit harsh on him is sometimes how isolated he is when he's, as we said before, the pod, where it's chipped up into the channels and he has to try and work for it. I think that's when the criticism's a bit unfair. However, I think the criticism's completely just when you have a player who, I think it's, I certainly don't want to blame, Puskás's price tag and, you look at all the issues going on off the field, but you think it's a big gamble. You expect a player to put those on target, and pass the keeper. And look at some of the chances he's had this season. It's just not been good enough in that final third in front of goal. And again, that was another example of whether it's a lack of confidence. I mean, you can't make that many excuses because if you have missed a great number of opportunities that other players would score in this division, that's not good enough, simple as. But I think we're going to go on to it. I thought the area, like I said, that he has got stick for, which is his hold-up play sometimes and his movement, I thought in the second half, it was a lot, lot better thanks to Andy Carroll. So I think although the miss was very, very poor, I thought he actually looked quite good after the break. So I sort of wanted to caveat that with that.
Well, one thing I would say about that miss is, and a lot of Puskás misses this season, is that, and I have declared myself as Puskás lone fan before on this podcast, or maybe not fan, but like they all feel like chances that like they're and people call them big chances, and I completely agree. Like, in the scheme of football, they are big chances. Like, yesterday, I thought that Samba came out really well and smothered that shot, and Puskás never really... If he'd got there earlier, he might have had a bigger chance. But they're all chances that if he was scoring goals, I think you'd forgive him for some of them. But the problem, as Matt kind of says, is that he doesn't have goals to fall back on, and he needs to start putting some in the back of the net, because otherwise... It is the case that you need your striker to score goals. Otherwise, it's a bit, he's not really doing his job.
Yeah, I totally agree. If you've got any kind of record to fall back on this season, 1-2 goals, like, you can fall back on it and at least say, okay, well, he didn't score this time, but he can score. But once you go 19, what is it, 19, 20 matches now without scoring, it's...
Yeah, but how many, and this is the other thing, and comes back to how we were playing to him. He hasn't had big chances in every game.
No.
But the problem is when he has big chances, he's not been taking them. Like,
yeah.
It feels like he gets one chance every two or three matches rather than getting two or three chances every match.
Yeah.
I would also say that I think although he doesn't have a goal to fall back on, I think just if you take yesterday's game in isolation, I think his second half performance was good enough to fall back on for the mistake, if that makes sense. Because I think his link-up play with Andy Carroll was really, really good. I thought Reading looked really bright. I think a lot of the opportunities, his pressing was brilliant. I remember at one point in about the 80th minute, I think he forced Sam Brin to put it out for a throw. I could be mistaken, but it was something along those lines. And it was brilliant. So I think that the whole season, no, it's not been good enough. And he's, he costs far too much to not be scoring the opportunities that he's had. But in yesterday's game, I thought his work rate was fantastic, and I thought actually what he did in the second half made up for that miss.
Shortly after halftime, probably the biggest chance of the game fell to Lewis Grabban, or at least one of the biggest chances of the game. Lewis Grabban seems to have, you know, four big chances of the game, and most of them he can probably consider himself. Fairly unfortunate not to have scored yesterday, Matt, because the chance just after half time with Liam Moore blocking it on the line, I'm not really sure how Forrest haven't scored.
Nah, it's ridiculous, right? And he does have other players coming into the box at the same time, but to be fair to Grabban, once you've rounded the keeper, I think you're expecting to score yourself. Like, Lewis Grabban was awfully selfish yesterday, as he kind of always is, but I'm not sure that I put this one down to that. This is also another situation where you kind of have to look at Scott Dann. He got absolutely rinsed against the touchline and allows the situation to develop. Liam Moore does well, but equally... What Liam Moore actually did well in that situation is, yes, he fell back onto the line, which he always does, but he got players in the right positions to also cover the men that were coming. Because sometimes he doesn't do that. He drops back and then it's still an easy tap-in for someone, which it would have been yesterday had Grabban passed it, but that's not the point. But yeah, I think that Forrest will have felt unlucky not to go 2-0 up. And as I say, yes, Grabban should have scored. Yes, Grabban probably should have passed. But I think a lot of that is hindsight after you don't put the ball in the back of the net.
And I guess that is Lewis Grabban as a player, as we've
100%.
Experienced as Reading fans. It's not that surprising, potentially. MJ, the big change in the game was Andy Carroll coming on. There's multiple strands to this. So let's start. Andy Carroll coming on for Liam Moore. Is this a sub that you would have expected to see from Paunovic?
No, but it's one I'm happy I saw because I thought it just showed that Paunovic was willing to go for a plan B, which I think he's been blamed previously for not doing. So I thought it was a brave change. I thought it showed intent and I thought, good on him for doing it. And I think it worked. I think what I was really happy with, obviously the intentions were clear that every ball was being lumped to the back stick for Andy Carroll to try and win the header. Which is fine by me because he won a couple of headers and obviously the crowd were up for it. I thought the atmosphere, for about a 20-minute spell in that second half, I thought the atmosphere was actually brilliant. Really, really, really good. And as a result, I think just because you saw Carroll win a few headers, I noticed, and this might be me clutching at straws or me overthinking it because I have an immediate love for Andy Carroll, but I just felt like I noticed a few of the Forest defenders, when they were going up for headers against George Puskas, didn't look like they were going with the same sort of "I'm going to win this" attitude. Whether they cowered a little bit or whether they were a bit not intimidated by the atmosphere, but maybe it just revved the Reading players up. But I just noticed that boost it gave them just in that physical sense to win a header, to win a one-on-one, to win a 50-50 challenge. I thought Reading were winning a lot more of those after Andy Carroll came on, and even when it wasn't him winning the ball, it just that whole boost it gave the ground, I thought was brilliant. And I thought that as a result of Carroll being the one that the long balls were being played to, Puskas could then make some runs off it. I thought Puskas looked better as a result. And I would be very, very, very happy to see those two starting the next game alongside each other.
We did have a bit of an instant impact as well. There was 20 minutes worth of, as you say, increased, I guess, intensity within the ground. But it only took 3 minutes after the sub, Matt, for Andy Carroll to make an impact. Winning the knockdown, which led to the corner for the equaliser.
Yeah, and Reading don't cross the ball, and that's a general rule. But clearly we did change the way we played into Andy Carroll. One of the nice things, actually, just generally, is that we didn't actually go route one the whole time. Like, Andy Carroll, yes, gave us a different option, but we used that option quite sparingly, which opened up other areas of the pitch. But yeah, I think it was Yeardom put in like kind of quite a nice floated ball, and obviously Andy Carroll doing Andy Carroll things. He wins a header, knocks it down to Swift, who, had he sorted his feet out a little bit quicker, might have scored then and there. But yeah, I mean, win a corner from it. Absolute 4D chess to put in a ball along the floor when you've got Scott Dann and Andy Carroll in the box. And Scott Dann just kind of guides it past all the defenders. It was such an understated goal in some ways. Like, along the floor, Scott Dann does not leather it. He just passes it into the area where there isn't anyone defending. And it was... I'm still not convinced that John Swift didn't miskick the corner, but even if he did, it worked pretty well.
It almost felt like instant reaction from Scott Dann. I'm not quite sure that was the plan or that was what he was expecting, as you say, because it didn't feel like, you know, I feel like if you were going to do that, you're going to try and lever it and really just smash it towards the goal. But he didn't really seem to do that. He just seemed to kind of like side foot the ball. And
well, he's a very classy defender.
From where I was sat in 1871, I was in a perfect diagonal angle with the ball. So it looked incredibly aesthetically pleasing as it sort of just slowly just drifted towards the line. So from where I was, it was lovely. But just going very quickly back to what Matt said about the crosses, it was so nice to see a cross either not being headed away by three men because George Puskás couldn't out-jump a 6'5" defender, obviously. And it was so nice not to see a low ball being cleared out of the front post. To see a deep cross being won by someone in a blue and white shirt was so refreshing because it just feels like so long since we've consistently seen that.
I couldn't tell you the last time we won a knockdown in the area and set up another shot.
Of any kind. Somebody asked about when the last, like, how good Yeardom is at crossing, and I just could not think of a Yeardom cross. Like, it was impossible to, like, I do not remember the last time he put one in. Yes, Barbara Rahman puts in a few, but like actual Reading players.
You who probably put in the most dangerous cross yesterday, which nobody got on the end of, was Andy Carroll.
Mm. Yes.
That was like the time when I was like, this guy has quality, because he absolutely leathered that.
It was an incredibly good cross.
It was so, honestly, I don't remember the last time I saw a cross with that much venom on it. It was so, and that's what I mean about the intensity he gave. He just looked like everything was done with a bit more power, a bit more, you know, going to the old fashioned, but grit. And it was nice to see that. And I think, you know, the fans responded to that. And if Reading are going to be, you know, in a difficult situation financially off the pitch, if you see more committed, you know, stages like we saw then, I think it can only serve Reading good, and hopefully Andy Carroll can be at the forefront of that.
Yeah, one thing I would say, and hopefully this leads on quite well, so you can use this as a link, Alex, just as a tip, is that we changed formation when Andy Carroll came on, obviously, to play two up top, but we also pushed a lot more players forward. So we kind of had the back four, even with the fullbacks pushing on, and then we had Josh Laurent in front of them, who had to do absolutely everything defensively. And occasionally that led to some quite large holes at the back, which, again, on a better day, like, it's funny because I think we all agree that Reading played a lot better in the second half, but I also think that Forest should have won the game about three times with chances that they had. So I think Reading will improve going on in the season, but I also think that they're like, we won't be playing this formation too often without more cover.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think the option you've only really got Josh Lauren at the moment as an option for that like defensive midfield spot. And as you say, he was doing nearly everything. He covered Babarahman in the second half an awful lot at the start of the second half. The chance which Forrest then had after Andy Carroll came on from Lewis Graben, again, this is another one, MJ, where I'm very surprised they haven't scored. And as Matt said, it feels like another chance where Forrest probably should have won the game there.
Yeah, and it was one of those chances where at the time I thought, oh, this is going to be one that you're going to look back on when Reading get an 86th minute winner, and you say, oh, you know, it was meant to be from this moment. Obviously, it didn't quite pan out just like that. But yeah, they should have scored. And I think Matt makes a fair point. I think Forrest, off pod before we started recording, I couldn't quite work out whether, because Forrest, you know, they've been in good form under the new boss, and they do look like they could be a decent team in the division. I don't know whether they were a bit lackadaisical, whether they didn't take Reading seriously enough, whether they were a bit lazy, whether they were a bit poor, or whether it was a bit of everything. Because I thought at moments they looked quite sharp, especially going forward, but then there were stages that they didn't. But then, you know, Graben gets that opportunity and you think they need to be clinical if they're, you know, serious about their aspirations. And obviously he wasn't, but as you alluded to earlier, not a man who likes to pass the ball massively. But conversely, you could say that, you know, if George Puskas had an opportunity, he took it around three players and then smashed into the back of the net, you'd say, you know, how brave was that? So I think it's one of those, it's one of those old football adages. It's a bit like my pet hate in football, when a penalty's taken, they send the keeper the wrong way, but they roll it down the middle and they say it's a great penalty. It's like, if they'd stayed still, it's not. So it's like, it depends how the situation pans out, if that makes sense. But yeah, obviously, maybe Reading got let off one there. But Reading, I think, could have had a number more opportunities if the referee had made different calls. So I think that may be a factor that might have needed to be added in.
Yeah, the referee in the last 15 or 20 minutes of that game was not good.
I think the whole game, he was giving Graben fouls for stuff that just weren't. Like, I actually think we kind of got away with some, because Danny Drinkwater was flying in some challenges. Like, on another day, he definitely could have picked up two yellows. But yeah, referee was poor,
Reading,
I felt.
Reading got away with a lot in the middle third, whereas Forrest got away with a lot in their, or in, you know, in their third, because I thought Reading could have had at least four or five free kicks where the ball would have been delivered into the box. So you say that, you know, Forrest had two or three good chances. I know this is all hypothetical and we'll never know. But I think a lot of Reading's good attacks and good opportunities to build a chance were cut short, and then they weren't punished.
The worst one being, and I'm fairly certain everybody will probably agree with this listening, the worst one being the Babarahman yellow card, because from where I'm sat and the replays that I've seen of it, it's probably one of the best tackles I've seen in all season. I have no idea how the referee's given a yellow card.
Well, somebody on Twitter said, like, how is he given that as a free kick? And I just knew exactly what they were talking about. You know, like, that's how bad that decision was. It was just it ludicrous. I thought he was going to send him off. And, like, in some ways, if he'd sent him off, I almost could have understood it more than a yellow card. Because, he sort of dived into it. But to give a foul and a yellow makes no sense to me.
Yeah, I think I agreed purely because he was the last man, wasn't he? He might not have been completely the last man, but it felt like he was. If Babbo had been beaten there, I don't know which Forest player it was, but if he'd been beaten, then he would have been thrown on goal from 30 yards out. And I could have understood a red card, even though it was never a red card challenge. At least I could have understood what the referee's logic was.
I would have said that, even though obviously it was different because it wasn't penalties, but I would say that those individual refereeing mistakes were worse than the mistakes made by the referee, who I can't remember the name of, against Sheffield Wednesday last season. I think
that's a big call.
I think the performance was, I know that it won't look as bad because it wasn't penalties, but the actual, like, the amount of decisions that were made wrong and how glaringly obvious some of them were, I actually think that might have been worse. It was, and I don't like to always blame the referees, because I do think it does come around, and sometimes Reading will get a bit lucky with refs. And that's happened many a time, and I will always admit that when I think that's the case. But I do think yesterday was hysterically terrible.
I don't think we can quite quite go that far. Like Oliver Langford, I'm 90% certain is a banned phrase on this podcast. It might get beeped out. I'm not sure.
No, because that was yeah, three or four penalty decisions. Admittedly, were all terrible, but the amount of decisions that even little ones yesterday that were, I mean, there was ones, I think it was a tackle Drinkwater made. He went steaming in front of the benches. And like, you're thinking, my word, he's going to be up. Is he booked? You couldn't even tell. It just the referee was, but then he was rushing over when, you know, it was a case of grappling. It was just bizarre.
Despite the fact that the referee was poor, Matt, the last 10 minutes, I don't think there was really many big chances in the last 10 minutes, despite how open the game felt.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think the last big chance, I can't remember how long it was from the end, was like Forrest having a cut back and Garner missing it, and then Graben trying to run all the way around the box when he definitely should have passed that time. But
there was the Southwood made a good stop late on, very late on.
Southwood did make a good stop. Yeah, all of these are Forrest chances, which kind of comes back to my point earlier.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I do. And conversely to that, I also never fully felt under threat. Like, it's such a... Being a football fan is weird, isn't it? It's all kind of... It's all feelings and vibes. And sometimes you'll come away from a game where you definitely should have lost feeling pretty happy about it, and other times you won't. Yeah, I felt like we actually managed the game okay in some ways, despite the fact that, as we've clearly seen in the last 30 minutes, we also didn't. But yeah, the thing that I kind of, and we've touched on this, like, and yes, the last 10 minutes, but the whole second half, or the last 30 minutes when Carroll came on, what he really did well is opened up space for others. And then I think that Reading managed that space really well and didn't let Forrest get the ball back. And that's why I think it felt like we were in control of the game so much, because this is the first game I remember where Reading dominated possession. Like, I don't remember another game like that in recent history. I'm sure that it will be last week or something, but probably not last week. But yeah, so we just were able to recycle the ball really well. And this is, again, where Tom Holmes comes into it, because the number of times that Tom Holmes had the ball and just sort of shimmied past Graben to keep it rather than punting it downfield or something was refreshing, right? Like, I don't think he'll come in for more, like, permanently, because clearly Moore is club captain and whatnot. But equally, I would not be upset to see a Dan Holmes partnership with that, with the passing that they have and the composure on the ball, because I think that that probably is something that Liam Moore lacks. And that was really beneficial towards the end of that second half.
So you say that we won't see Tom Holmes come in for Liam Moore, Matt, but will Tom Holmes start instead of Liam Moore on Tuesday night at home?
It's a good question. Who knows? I mean, Liam Moore has obviously done a lot of travelling in the last 2 weeks, which I think came into Panovic's decision-making about taking him off. And also, like, yes, he was at fault for the first goal when he was on a yellow card as well. I personally wonder whether it was a change that they kind of always had in mind, given those air miles and whatnot. Somebody was going to have to come off for Carroll after all. I think Moore will still start. Like, Moore to me seems to be a player that all players want to start every game, don't they? But I don't think he would be particularly happy being left on the bench. He is club captain at the end of the day, and I think that that earns you the right to start games. That's a bit of an old-fashioned view in some ways, but you kind of, if you're going to start dropping him, then that raises other questions, which I think at the minute probably don't want to be answered.
Yeah, I think I can definitely understand where you're coming from with that one. I think if there was a case to be made for him to be dropped and put on the bench, it probably isn't during the middle of a injury-ridden season where we don't really have that many options, unfortunately.
The only other thing is that you probably still want to keep Yeardom at right wing, and therefore Holmes probably has to play at right back. That's, you know, so I would probably expect to see, I think, an unchanged team, because Carroll probably won't be playing two games in 3 days. My guess would be an unchanged team for Tuesday.
MJ, I know that you would love to see Carroll start on Tuesday, being, you know, number one member of the Andy Carroll fan club.
I thought that was Paul.
I don't know what I'm basing this on. I think it's just the first time that in a while the sun's coming and you just thought, that's just quite fun, if nothing else. You just look at it and you just think, I'm going to enjoy watching. I'm looking forward to watching Andy Carroll. As good as, you know, I think players like Junior Hoylett in the summer, he's a sensible signing, he's added depth, and I think he's been a solid player for the club. But I don't really go to the stadium and think, I can't wait to watch Junior Hoylett perform today. No offence to him, very lovely bloke, very, very, very lovely bloke. I've met him, or I've chatted to him, great guy. But he just doesn't have that, he's not an old, you know, he's not a former England international, he's not a former...
he's a current Canadian international, and you should put some respect on that.
Yeah, he's not. He wasn't involved in essentially a swap deal with, you know, well, not a swap deal, a transfer saga with Fernando Torres, who was arguably the, you know, the hottest striker in the world at that time. I think Junior Hoylett would understand why it's a bit more exciting, and I just think it's just a bit. It's just like I said, when the signing was announced, I just thought it was quite funny. I thought, well, that's good. That'll be fine. I'm going to look forward to that, and that's what football's all about.
The funny thing that about that signing to me is that Paunno said last night that Scott Dan basically convinced him to come, and it does feel like you when you bring your mate down to five aside because you're short on numbers.
And that's why I like it. It's just
Andy Carroll he's probably the best ringer we could get, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's how it always is, isn't it? Your mate is always the best player anyway. So, you know, if he stays fit, like. It'll be like, I already think that he's shown why we've brought him in. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, if we get half an hour a game out of him, I'd be pretty happy, to be honest.
I would be, if he gave us half an hour every game and scored two goals, but he gave performances like he gave yesterday, which were committed. They had flashes of skill and they helped the team. That's all I'm asking for. And I would, you know, wish it. And then if in January, you know, he left, I would wish him all the best and nothing but success.
I hope that he doesn't leave in January if we do get performances like that every week, because you can only see Reading rising the table if we get performances like that from him. We could do with another one on Tuesday night, MJ. Sheffield United at home. Sheffield United this season, we'll do a quick couple of minutes on them. Not been very good under Slavisa Jovanovic. They didn't win yesterday again, drew against Coventry at home. And at the minute, they're only a couple of points above us in the table. And I think we could actually go above them if we beat them.
Yeah, strange one, really. Because I didn't think they would look as good as Bournemouth. I thought Bournemouth and Fulham, for me, and West Brom, they were the three obvious teams to look at. But you would have thought, I was thinking of Sheffield United, they'll be there or thereabouts. And yeah, they haven't really been. I mean, I feel very, very sorry for them because, as a club, because obviously they had that brilliant first season and then the pandemic hit. And, you know, fans who've been waiting so long to get into that position. It can, like, you know, Reading fans had obviously waited longer in 2006-07, you know, when Reading got up. But when we had that brilliant first campaign for the first time after a long, long wait, obviously, like I said, Reading fans waited longer. But can you imagine that second season then? It would be behind closed doors and Reading were losing every week. It would have just... I understand why it would have just sucked the energy out of the club, because with clubs like, you know, West Brom, they're up and down every year. Fulham are up and down every year. Fans know what it's like. So I get why the, you know, it's flat, a popular manager's left. I think there's quality in the squad, but there's probably a lot of players who are on too much money for their performances. So it's just probably it needs a spring clean, that club. It just needs something to reinvigorate it, because I can understand why it's probably a bit of a miserable place at the moment. And hopefully Reading can capitalise on that, because I think the momentum will probably be in Reading's favour. I think a win and a draw out of the last two games, I'd have probably snatched a hand off if you'd offered me that before the Birmingham game. So, yeah, why not?
And Matt, what do you reckon to Tuesday night? Do you reckon we can take down Sheffield United?
Oh, I'm never confident. But
this is true.
I think there's no reason why we can't. But equally, I also expect most teams to turn up at the Medeski and fight for, you know, a draw, I guess. I reckon a draw is probably I actually got this result right from the preview. I said it would be 1-1, and I kind of have a feeling that Tuesday might be something quite similar. Reading are still going to have a problem with playing 90 minutes when they don't have many fit senior substitutes, and also, you know, playing three times in a week, which is what this week is going to be. So yes, this was a good result and should be treated as such. But I don't think that we're necessarily out of choppy waters just yet until we get some of the other players back too.
I'll note you down for a 1-1.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll be back on Wednesday after the Sheffield United game. So yeah, make sure you join us then. Hopefully it won't be spoils shared then, and Reading will have picked up 3 points. Thanks very much for listening. Cheers.